the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. Today we have a guest host, Donald Bryson, our president and CEO of Civitas. He's sitting in today for Brooke. Brooke will be back next week. We're going to really delve into state issues today. And one of the things we're going to address, I know this is hasn't maybe caught wind with all of the grassroots yet, hasn't caught fire per se, but the potential teacher walkout, a strike, some people are calling it, on May 1st, the NCAE proposed walkout, may have a lot of parents in a little bit of a bind coming up on May 1st. So you'll want to hear about that. We're going to talk about the indictment of the North Carolina GOP chairman, Robin Hayes, and we're going to talk about the state health plan. What's going on? What's Del Falwell is trying to do for the state, and what's the opposition look like in the General Assembly to his plan? So, Donald, how's it going?
Well, things are going well. Spring is in full swing, if I can get that out right. And, of course, that means that all the kid activities are coming about. And so we've got a lot of karate classes, which isn't necessarily outside, but my kids want to get outside and play more. And I've got a six-year-old and a two-year-old who definitely want to get on some bicycles right now, but it's not a lot of fun with all the yellow pollen on the ground.
Yeah, I have a two-year-old that is a little bit younger than your two-year-old, and he is always wants to be outside, always wants to get into things. His mom, my wife, are in Annapolis right now with the five-month-old. She's at an academic conference, and I know she was talking about, I think Tillis was there and Senator Martha McSally.
Right.
They were speakers, but it was a big academic conference, a lot of issues related to sexual assault. She's having fun up there in Maryland. But I have to watch James by myself, which is actually a lot of work watching a two-year-old. And I put out on Twitter this morning that two-year-olds are actually very good debaters because they wear you down.
They do.
With their persistence, and you end up giving in, even though, you know, you say you're going to be this disciplined model parent, but sometimes you just wear down with a two-year-old. They can outlast you at times. They can, you know, he asks for apple juice, and he will ask for apple juice 88 times. You know, 89 times is not too many for him if he wants to add one in there.
And once he gets tired of asking for apple juice and you say no, he wants to know why.
Yeah.
But why? Why? Oh, man, they'll wear you out. And then they'll do something sweet like, I love you, Dad. And,
yep,
of course, it all goes away. But, yeah, those little guys are just absolutely persistent in when they want something.
Yeah, and James has gone through this phase where he was really into insects. He loved insects. He loves bees. He loves roly-polies. He loves reading about them and seeing them outside. But now he's afraid of them. So he's had a couple meltdowns, which is weird because he was totally into them. He had a couple meltdowns where he just sort of went crazy when he saw a bee. And he went crazy when he saw a ladybug, which is kind of funny because he talks about how nice and cute ladybugs are. So it's funny to just see the antics sometimes of two-year-olds and how their disposition and personalities work. They can, you know, it can kind of be a big pendulum swing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You never really know. My two-year-old, the big thing with her is the big freak out is if there's anything in the bathtub when she takes a bath, if like there's a hair, even if it's one of her hairs or something like that. Oh my gosh, you think that it ends the world, but then she gets outside and rolls in the mud. So I don't really understand that sort of consistency, but the pendulum does swing violently back and forth.
Yeah, kids are fun. They're a real blessing. It's a lot of hard work, though. I mean, one of the things I was dealing with when Kelly's gone, she's been doing more of the diaper stuff lately, and I have a tendency to gag in some of the diaper changes. So I created this makeshift gas mask out of my T-shirt, wrapped around my head real, real tight, and it did prevent some of the gagging, but I posted that picture on Facebook of me with, I had glasses on, too, like safety goggles. A little bit dramatic, I would say, but, you know, I had an incident where I kind of scared James a little bit when I was changing his diapers because I almost or sort of did vomit just a little bit on one of his diaper changes. So I'm working on that and getting a lot better. I apologize to you, James. Your dad, I guess, has a little bit of a weak stomach at times. I can be tough and manly in some things and then not so tough in other things, but I'm working at it. So, Donald, let's look at the big news story in North Carolina. Everybody's covering it, obviously. There's been an indictment of Robin Hayes, the North Carolina GOP chairman. I don't think he's resigned yet, but he's talked about a replacement. Mm-hmm. But here's from WBTV in Charlotte. I'm just going to read a couple short paragraphs from them. An indictment unsealed in court on Tuesday morning accused Hayes, Durham-based business owner Greg Lindberg, and two Lindberg associates of directing illegal political donations to North Carolina Insurance Commissioner Mike Causey in an effort to bribe him. Causey, who was actually working with federal authorities, is not charged in the indictments. All four men appeared before a federal judge on Tuesday and pleaded not guilty. Each man turned himself in to the FBI prior to Tuesday's hearing and was released on a $100,000 unsecured bond. What's going on?
It's some terrible stuff if you're a North Carolina Republican. What appears to have happened is this fellow, Greg Lindberg from Durham, has something of a small insurance empire with a couple of businesses like Eli Global and I forget his other company. And they sell all kinds of variety of life insurance and property insurance and that sort of thing. In order to get changes to state insurance regulation, they wanted to funnel in, was it $250,000?
Yeah, I think that's right.
To the campaign of Republican North Carolina Insurance Commissioner, which we elect the insurance commissioner here in North Carolina, Mike Causey, and this would be his first term. If everything's true, and again, these are just indictments. Nobody's been convicted of anything.
Innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, this is all alleged. But if this is true, the number one takeaway, which nobody's talking about, is that Mike Causey is an absolute public servant.
Yep.
And that took a ton of bravery to have a conversation where somebody wanted to bribe you and immediately you turn around and you call the FBI because you knew that it was illegal.
Yeah, I mean, my first instinct would be, how much? Yeah. Just kidding, mostly.
Mostly right. Kidding. But no, I was really surprised by that. But what becomes disturbing for the North Carolina Republican Party is that it appears that the chairman got involved with this. And actually, you know, sort of made calls to Causey, trying to talk Causey into
right.
it. And so in the scheme, you have three businessmen, which are all partners. You have Greg Lindberg and two of his associates from the insurance companies. And then you have Chairman Hayes. Now, I believe Mike Causey, I don't remember the source, but I believe Mike Causey said to someone in the press yesterday that there may be more indictments coming. And I don't
right.
know who that implies or anything like that. But it's
and it doesn't mean it's politicians per se, you know,
no,
or elected officials.
It does not, but it does mean that it might get uglier before it gets better. Of course, in the indictment, they mentioned two public officials, but they only called them Public Official A and Public Official B. Public Official A, in particular, was said to have made some calls on behalf of Lindberg to some other people in the course of all this. And then Politico ran a story earlier this week. Implicating that Congressman Mark Walker from the North Carolina 6th Congressional District was Public Official A in the indictment. But he has not been indicted himself.
Yeah. Yeah, and I finished up, just finishing up some work on our newspaper. You can sign up for that at our website, nccivitas.org, on the front page. You can get a free copy of that paper in your mailbox every month. But one of the things that I was writing about was just the importance of organizations like Civitas that are going to be standing for principles and convictions over political power or parties. And so I think that's just an important reminder, is not to put too much trust in political power mm-hmm. or political parties in terms of delivering for us, and to have those strong convictions and look for organizations, especially if you're a conservative, that carry that conservative mantle but aren't mixed up in the day-to-day politics of basically trying to control not only the party, but empower the party for the sake of the party and not necessarily the people of North Carolina. So this is just an important reminder about the need for clean government, for clean operation. And like Donald said, it's very, very important to give credit and accolades to Mike Causey for blowing the whistle here.
Absolutely it is. And again, this isn't over. You know, I mentioned Congressman Walker a second ago, and of course his office came out and said that they've been cooperating with federal authorities on this and that he has not been indicted. And that's true. He hasn't been indicted. But it should give you pause if, in fact, he is Public Official A. It gives me pause personally. I'll say that. But again, this is all alleged. Nonetheless, it does appear that the North Carolina GOP is in something of a tailspin going into a new chairman's election here within the next 2 months at their annual convention. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with that. I know that there are about four people that are going to run for GOP chair, but no matter who gets that, they're going to have a mess on their hands trying to cooperate with federal authorities, because this isn't going to end just tomorrow. Even, you know,
that's a good
point. This is going to be a jury trial. They're going to have to be turning over records for several months now.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're going to continue to follow this story on Civitalk. We'll have updates, and we'll also offer some deeper insights into what's going on from a political and cultural standpoint. But we're going to shift to HB 184 and the state health plan. And this, just reading real briefly from the legislation, it talks about participation in the North Carolina State Health Plan for teachers and state employees, and to further study redesigning the state health plan in a way that adopts new practices and payment methodologies that promote health while incentivizing participation from both enrollees and providers. And one of the big debate going on is, of course, Dale Falwell wants to create transparency. The state treasurer wants to create more transparency in pricing to save taxpayers money. And I always thought, no matter what side of the issue you're on in this debate on the state health plan is, I don't know why anybody would be against more transparency and saving taxpayers money if that's an option in this high cost of healthcare today. So, Donald, I mean, this is important. You've wrote two pieces, part one and part two, in terms of following the money on this. Mm-hmm. There were 34 Republicans in the General Assembly in the House that voted along with Democrats to basically strip power from Dale Falwell and to water down some of the effect that he has to save taxpayer money. Give us a little bit of insight of what may happen in the Senate and what's going forward here on this legislation.
Well, this bill, you know, from a conservative viewpoint, is very disappointing, because what you have is State Treasurer Dale Falwell wanting to implement two significant changes to the state health plan. One, he wants to tie reimbursement rates on the state health plan directly to Medicare pricing, but 177% of Medicare reimbursements, which is, you know, pretty, it's a uniform rate, is all I'm trying to say, across all hospitals. The second thing he wants to move the state health plan to a reference-based pricing model, meaning that all the prices are out there, this is what the state health plan will pay for this service and this service and this service and this service, rather than commercial payment agreements, so that the state health plan has to negotiate with each different provider and hospital across the state. Basically, the state health plan doesn't know what we pay. And that's not just a problem in the state health plan. You and I, when we go to the doctor and they say, we need to run a test,
right? Well,
you and I don't know what that is. And that there are a lot of people who argue that is not the problem. There's no single problem with healthcare. There are a ton of problems. And that's one thing, that people spend a lot of money on healthcare because they don't know what they're spending.
Right.
And when you talk about a health plan with 700,000 employees on it, maybe we should probably know what we're spending, or, you know, for cold medicine or flu shots or things like that, which those are important things, but still, we need to know what we're spending on them. So this bill would take away, would stop Treasurer Falwell's plan in its place, would prevent him from doing anything for at least the next 18 months through December 21st of 2020, of 2020. And then they would, essentially, this is what legislators love to do, is study it. Study the state health plan and see what they need to do to fix it, because it becomes fiscally insolvent with a $33 billion unfunded liability in 2023. So instead of doing something now, they push it off for another 18 months and get us closer to that ticking time bomb of 2023. This has passed the House, 34 Republicans and 41 Democrats. Some more Democrats voted for it than Republicans, even though Republicans have the majority. And now it will go on to the Senate. The sense that I'm getting from the Senate is that the Senate doesn't want any part of it. They have some skepticism over Treasurer Falwell's plan, and I think even the Treasurer would say his plan isn't the perfect plan, but it's something they can implement now.
Right.
But I don't think that the Senate wants to touch this, because now it's turned into sort of a political hot potato, on top of the fact that it might be bad policy.
Yeah, it seems to me like it's just the classic case of kicking the can down the road. And so what happens is, now you have a General Assembly that looks like they're reflecting Washington a little bit more than that importance of prudent fiscal conservatism and transparency that, so, you know, has been a great boon for North Carolina. But, you know, this should give, I think, people pause, because anytime lawmakers basically, you know, take campaign contributions and may not be serving the best interests of the citizens across the state, and certainly not serving the best interests of taxpayers. So, you know, it's something I think to really educate yourself on. And no matter where you stand on this issue, again, like I said before, I think it's, you know, paramount that you give the state treasurer credit in terms of trying to find ways to save money and make this state health plan solvent going forward. Because, you know, one of the things I like about Dale Falwell is just his ability, I think, to connect with people in terms of these kind of issues, these kind of monetary issues. You know, it's not an area that I've always been an expert at, but he's really good at explaining the budgetary process, to explaining the process in terms of what is the obligation going to be. Because one of the things that he points out is it's going to add $1.1 billion in unfunded liabilities going forward.
Right.
So, I mean, he talks about here from a press release from just a week ago, he says that HB 1 84 estimates that the bill would cost taxpayers between $429 to $591 million over the next 3 years based on projections from the actuarial analysis from Siegel right. Company and Hartman of Associates. So it could threaten the triple bond rating. I mean, there are a lot of things that he brings out in this press release. So if you want to go read that, you can go to Del Falwell's site. It's one of the first things up there.
It could threaten the bond rating for the state because we can't cover our debt. It could threaten the existence of the state health plan. And I don't think it'll get to either one of those, because what I think is the most likely scenario is that if we just let this go along and we don't make any structural changes to the state health plan, we're going to start raising taxes, which I know all of those allegedly conservative Republicans down at the General Assembly really want to pass a tax increase, because that tends to get people reelected.
Yeah, I think to me it's just a little surprising to see some of the Republicans not stick with their state treasurer here. I think he's on the right path. I think he's asking important questions we had too many lawmakers, statewide lawmakers in the state for a long time, not asking these type of questions
right.
about the liability for taxpayers going forward in the state. And it's created a mess for this treasurer, and he's slowly trying to dig out of it. And I think doing his due diligence to serve taxpayers. And that's an important concept that's often lost with a lot of public officials now. They just want to basically pander to special interest groups. But I think, to his credit, Falwell looks like he's going out and sticking up for all the taxpayers mm-hmm. of this state equally and having their best interest in mind. And also for the people who are in the state employee plan. He's trying to make it in a case where it's solvent and it's going to be on a good path going forward. So this is something that obviously we're going to keep track of, too. It's an important story. I wonder, Donald, it doesn't seem like it's really resonated with the average person out there yet, but I think it might at some point. And certainly Falwell will address, I think, this issue head on during his reelection campaign. I assume he's probably going to run for reelection. But, is it something you think the average person is paying attention to at the moment?
I don't think the average person is paying attention to. Most of the press that has gone towards this has been, from the NC Insider, which is a subscription-only service. The larger outlets haven't been paying a lot of attention to this. But even if they did, it's difficult to explain in a seven-minute, segment on, the nightly news about Medicare reimbursement rates
right.
and, $33 billion unfunded liability. Why is it unfunded liability? And that sort of thing. So, maybe if we get down to crunch time in the Senate if it ever goes to the governor, we might do it. But somebody's going to have to pay attention to this in the media eventually, but they're definitely not doing it right now.
Yeah, and I think just that $1 billion in liability going forward, it's an important story. People do need to pay attention to it. It's not the sexy story out there, obviously, when you've got scandals and other big topics going on in North Carolina, or just straight-up partisan gamesmanship about what's going on in D.C. or something like that. But it's an important story, and we're going to continue to follow it. We're going to touch on for a little bit longer here the potential teacher walkout scheduled for May 1st. NCAE is calling on teachers to have a day of walkout or a strike, depending on what you think about of that, on May 1st. It's obviously going to inconvenience a lot of families. I think this is an important point. I brought this the other day on Lockwood Show, is that you have had, because of the hurricanes, especially in Onslow County, you've had school districts that missed 6 to 8 weeks of school in some
right.
areas of our state. And so now you have a potential walkout. You had this last year with NCAE was, of course, taking this issue of teacher pay, isolating it, using it for political partisanship to support our governor, to support certain Democrats in this state, and really isolating that issue and using it. And, of course, one of the big scandals, or not really scandals, but one of the big headlines right now coming out of this story is, the raised fist on the NCAE flyer or Facebook page, which of course has ties to socialist movements and socialist labor movements throughout history. I mean, the Spanish American, the Spanish Civil War between communists and fascists, this was a big symbol for the Marxist communists over there. Of course, the May Day movement, There's no coincidence that they probably picked May 1st for a reason. It has ties to labor angst and labor agitation throughout the world, and certainly in this country. So, Donald, I mean, I think there's going to be some pushback here from parents this time. Certainly, I think there's going to be a little bit more pushback from principals and superintendents. The teacher pay raises have happened, I think, for 4 or 5 consecutive occurrences and budgets here in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So you've had it going on now. We're second in the Southeast. We are, I believe, John Locke or Terry Stoops had an important study where he talked about we're 20th now in the nation when you factor in cost of living. So we're in the upper tier if you're factoring in cost of living. There has been progress made on teacher pay. I think there had been problems in North Carolina. I think most people would be in agreement about that. But I think one of the things that bothers me a little bit about this is it's clearly becoming so political. It's such a political grab for power.
Well, it's only political. I think that's absolutely true. Where there's some teachers that needed to be paid more, I don't disagree with that. When you're 46th in the nation, and you're down on the bottom as we were just a few years ago, I think there's probably some room for improvement. As someone who's even skeptical of the size and scope of government, but now even according to the NEA's number, the National Education Association, which is the largest teachers union in the nation, they say that we're 29th. We've cracked into the 20s. And they had us at 46. I think that's clear progress on the amount that teachers are paid. And so what we have right now is the NCAE is more concerned, and this is my opinion, but I still believe that it's 1,000% true. The NCAE is more concerned about getting Democrats elected than they are about helping teachers. And that has a lot to do with, you can take a look at their agenda and see what's going on. They're doing two things. One, they're working to get Democrats elected. They didn't, make a big deal when teacher pay was cut or teachers were furloughed back in 2008, 2009, and that time during the Great Recession, they didn't say anything about that. But now that teacher pay is increasing and Republicans are doing it, they're becoming even more outraged, which is sort of ridiculous. And the way that they're trying to do it, you can see the imagery in their fists. And then, of course, last year they had language in some of their talking points that this is not union-like activity, this is union activity, which tells me that they're not only trying to organize more, but they're trying to organize in a way that politically they may be, in the future, be trying to move to get rid of the right-to-work laws here.
Right. Well, the right-to-work laws have been struck down in a lot of Midwestern states that were big union states recently. Of course, Scott Walker had a big battle in Wisconsin. Michigan was a state that went to right work to work in the last few years. So I think, there's a lot of the labor unions see the Midwest as sort of seeding on this issue, mm-hmm. Certainly certain pockets in the Midwest. And North Carolina is an important state to the left. It's a state that they're unwilling to concede, that they've made that clear for a long, long time. So I think they're pushing some of this political labor movement language into North Carolina. And we're just traditionally not that state. But, they're going to push for it hard. This is not a state where there's been a lot of agitation between management and labor. Folks have gotten along, and we're all for people having the right to ask for more pay or, go and seek more pay at a different place of work. And so, I think that's just something that we got to keep in mind, is sort of this agitation element that's coming into this. It's not about serving the taxpayers. It's not about serving parents. I think one of the things that's a little bit frustrating to me is you have so many North Carolinians who make less than teachers do.
Yes.
And so they have to go out and find childcare, especially if they have younger kids. They have to go out and find childcare in this situation when teachers are going to take off work. And that's hard, especially when you are a parent, a single parent, or a low-income family that are just barely scraping by in this state.
Right.
You have to miss a day of work, or you have to pay somebody to watch your child. And that's really tough.
And of course, the average teacher pay is what, $53,000. The median household income in the state is around $46,000. So the average teacher makes more than the median household.
Right.
The household in North Carolina. And for whatever reason, that's lost on people. I think that, when we talk about this, we need to be sure that teachers are a state treasure. They do a lot of good things for our state. They're ensuring the economic future of our state by making sure the workforce of tomorrow is educated. Teachers' unions, which the NCAA is a union, whether they want to say they are or not legally, are a detriment to society. And I think that, the NCAA is just causing a lot of political problems right now for no good, because they're not trying to help teachers. They're not trying to help students. They're trying to gain political power.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I think one of the things that, that's just frustrating on this issue is that you had a day off to protest this on a school day last year. They're going to do it again. And it's all about, I think, helping, let's be honest, let's open it up. It's all about helping this governor secure his reelection. I mean, we've done a lot of polling, Donald, at Civitas, that has shown the governor has a lot of strength on education issues. He has a lot of ability to sort of, because he's not the one having to vote on the budget, he can say, well, that's not enough. That's not enough. Every time there's a teacher raise here in North Carolina, he can easily go, that's not enough. And of course, we all know it's never enough. I mean, you could make up a dollar amount. And one of the things, we met some great teachers here at Civitas. We went down to the state capitol, Brooke, Bob Lupke, our policy guy here, and Brooke and I all went down to the state capitol and talked to folks, talked to teachers, obviously a lot of great teachers, even teachers who are pro NCAE that we met with, right. A lot of great, valuable teachers in this state. But they wouldn't ever say how much was enough in terms of pay. You know, I'd throw out numbers like, is $80,000 a fair teacher salary? And they would say, you know, they defer on that. You know, they would never come up with a dollar amount. And so I think there's a level of, you know, that issue right there is just not going to resonate with a lot of parents across the state. And I think they're overstepping in a way that there's going to be some pushback this time.
Yeah, and this gets into some deeper economic stuff. But, you know, when you talk about how much is enough and you say, well, you know, they're making more than the average or than the median household income. And the answer you get back from the NCAE and their ilk is, well, they're not being paid enough based on their level of education. Wait a second. We're paying people based on their education level, not the value that they bring to the workplace. But that's not how we pay people at all. There are people with PhDs who are jobless. So should we be paying them some sort of basic income because they have a PhD? That doesn't make any sort of sense. Are they providing additional value? And where the NCAE is going really, really off track is that they're saying a teacher is a teacher is a teacher, and they're not allowing us to differentiate between really great teachers and not as great teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you want to read more about this issue, definitely go check out Bob Lukey's pieces. He's got a lot of great stuff on teacher pay. We've got several people here at Civitas writing about this issue. I've written a little bit about it. And so I think one of the things that we really need to focus on is, you know, we want to do things to help out teachers. We want to do things to help out public employees. And you have to be fiscally solvent to do that. And you have to give credit to this General Assembly for making the necessary sacrifices, not only cutting taxes, but doing it in a way that there's been enough in the budget to raise teacher pay. I think when Democrats ran the state, Donald, they did not do a good job on teacher pay. And that was the reason that we were 47th. And so you know, there's been a lot of progress made. Anybody can come forward and say that there needs to be more. I mean, in an ideal utopian world, we obviously want to pay teachers more and more. But one of the things we talk here about Civitas, and I think this is an important issue, is expanding school choice and also having merit pay. I think that's an important thing. Most areas of the private sector have merit pay. I mean, if someone is valuable to a company or they're valuable to an organization, they're going to get paid more. If they're not valuable, if they just kind of sit around and don't do much, they're either going to be terminated or their wages are going to be stagnant. And, you know, there's a lot of, I think, evidence for good merit-based pay that we can have in North Carolina and attract some even better folks. We have a lot of great teachers in the state, but I think we can attract a little bit more of a diverse field of people who may not just be education majors and they just didn't only study education in college. And so I think that's a way to attract some new blood and some new thinkers into teaching. So I think one of the things too that is just invaluable for the state is just expanding school choice. I know there was a recent bill, Donald. Can you tell us about just any opportunities quickly to expand school choice going on in the General Assembly? Because I think parents, our polling has said so, they want to have options. And you know, we're a changing society in many ways. And I think people understand that when they go out and shop for schools, they realize they have resources to go out and shop for anything they want in a free market economy. And so they want that when it comes to education too. So what are maybe a few bills that have possibility, at least getting some traction, or that we need to look out for, and maybe people can call and say, hey, I support that.
One bill this week, I don't remember the bill number, was presented by Senator Deanna Ballard and Senator Ben Clark from he's down from down in Fayetteville. She's from up in Watauga County around Boone, Blowing Rock in that area. They presented a bill to expand the eligibility requirements for the Opportunity Scholarship Program and some of the voucher programs for children with disabilities. So right now, the Opportunity Scholarship Program is available for people that are at 138% of the federal poverty level. Well, there are some people that are at 140% or 150% that are still sort of low-income families that could really utilize some of these vouchers. And so this would expand some of that eligibility. I think that would help a lot of families in that way, and we'll be watching that here at Civitas, particularly Bob Lubke, our policy director.
Yeah, if you can go to our website, nccivitas.org, I believe Bob has an article up on that already. He has some facts on that bill, and he has links to the actual text. So go check that out. We are out of time. I don't know, Donald, do you have any parting thoughts or words of wisdom for our listeners this week? Well, I think it'd be important to just sort of give them, because it may be a few weeks before you're back, so just give them some insight or some advice on what they can do to to navigate sort of the North Carolina political waters?
Right now, I would say if you're interested in what's going on at the General Assembly, it is the most important time to be diligent, not the end of session. And that's because we're getting towards the crossover date. If they don't pass from the Senate to the House or the House to the Senate, these bills, then they're done for the session. And so some crazy stuff starts happening in the next couple of weeks. And so keep an eye on what's going on at the General Assembly. Call your legislator if you're interested in particular pieces of legislation.
Thanks so much. We're signing off. Brooke will be back next week. This is Ray Notestein and Donald Bryson. Hope you have a great week and blessings to you.